Hi everyone, it's Kirsty. Look, I just wanted to quickly drop in and make a bit of an apology before we get started with this episode. When we recorded, it seems that there was some sort of problem with my mic, so I'm really sorry, but there's a bit of an echo sound. Hope it doesn't drive you too crazy. We're trying to fix the problem right now so that it doesn't happen next week. Those who are really on the ball will have noticed that it's been 2 weeks running now that we've had this issue. We don't hear it when we're recording, but then we hear it later on. Anyway, not your problem, it's ours. But I just wanted to say sorry because I know for some people who listen with headphones in, that echo is really annoying. But just wanted to let you know, working on it, going to fix it. And there was no way we could have deleted this episode because I think it's one of our best. See you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we are all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 11,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie based here in Qatar. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, and she's in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of temporary accommodation, first day at a new school, and drunken farewell parties. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
All good here, Kirsty Rice. So I'm actually heading off to Copenhagen tomorrow for the rest of the week for a Northern European International Schools Under 12 volleyball tournament. I'm going to have a drink with a few fatties who'll be in town for the event. Oh. We might need it after our 3 days of bleacher support work. What about you?
Well, I want photos of your fellow fatties in Copenhagen, please. I expect to see them on the Two Fat Expats page. Oh, you lucky duck. Well, my husband's in Vietnam this week and I'm on day three of a 27-day booze-free cleanse, which probably wasn't the best timing.
Oh, goodness. Good luck with that. Okay, we're going to follow our usual format and break the podcast up into five topics, which of course are...
geographically challenged, which is where we talk about the impact of having lived in more than one place. We'll also cover expat relationships. That can be anyone you've met in your expat travels.
We'll also look at expat tech, where we look at the latest tech available to expats and how it affects our lives. And expat money, where we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats.
And location, 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 which is where we speak to an expat living somewhere in the world and we ask them five expat questions.
Okay, let's get started with geographically challenged. Kirsty, what have you got?
Geographically challenged. Now, this isn't my challenge, but it's more maybe a window into when you're local and everyone else is an expat. Nikki, before I start this story, for obvious reasons, I just want to say that this may not be the school that I'm currently at or the location that I'm currently in. It's a story of a room that I've been in where I've seen something take place and it's given me sort of a new perspective, and I also thought our listeners might enjoy a window into this perspective as well. I, you know, at some point in my life was at a school information night about an upcoming camp, and the camp involves 12 to 13-year-old boys and girls, and there were activities in the camp that involved swimming and fishing and climbing and camping in tents, etc. And these are all things that I haven't, you know, I don't think twice about my kids doing in any sort of environment, right? It's just, to me, that's school camp.
Yeah.
But where I was at the time when this conversation was taking place was in a predominantly Muslim country. And so the locals are predominantly Muslim. But we had obviously being an international school, you had people from all over the world. The people explaining the information night, the teachers were American, and so they were running through, you know, you've got your sheet of everything that has to happen and what's going to be required and what they need to take and whatever. And at the end of the information night, after the sort of very last question had been asked, a father, a local father, put up his hand and he asked how the school would make his daughter more comfortable, as she was a Muslim and she might not feel all that comfortable being in the water with the boys or in mixed company with the boys and being in certain situations. Now, I feel like the teacher really misread the situation. I think her mind went into autopilot of, oh, he wants to know about her swimming and whatever. And so she started to explain to him about these wonderful swimming costumes you could get now where they were sort of head to toe and whatever. And you could see him just thinking, yeah, I know about those costumes. What do you reckon?
Where do you think we shot?
Yeah. And she was talking about that, and then he had to say, look, I've waited for everyone else to ask their question because I just was hoping someone else would ask this question and I wouldn't have to. But no one has, so I am. And he said, it's not – he said, I want her to go on this camp. I desperately want her to go on this camp. She's not so sure. She thinks she's going to feel different to everyone else. She's the one that's feeling awkward and uncomfortable. She's the one that's worried about whether she'll feel different when she's there. And I'm here tonight because I want you to tell me what I can tell her that's going to make her feel more comfortable. So the reason I wanted to talk about this today was I think it's just such an interesting scenario of, you know, we talk about expat life all the time, but many of us live in countries where there are massive amounts of expats and where the locals are completely overrun by expats, and they choose to involve themselves very much in expat life, where their children go to, you know, international schools with lots of different expats, and these things come up all the time. And I just thought, so often when I hear other people talk about people that don't live in Muslim countries, that don't understand the religion, quite often they'll throw their opinions out there of, and they always talk about these terrible men, these oppressive men. And I just thought this was a good example of why it's not.
It is the exact opposite
in many cases. It is not these, you know, terrible, oppressive men. Here was this man saying, look, that's not the issue. I want you to give me information so that I can be armed to go home and convince her that this would be great for her, that she would really enjoy this camp. You know, because, yes, there are outfits you can wear, and I want to be really clear here, Nikki, too, of this isn't about being a Muslim. This is about culture and where culture is comfortable.
Yeah, because there are different countries that are predominant Muslim populations, and the people in those countries have totally different cultures.
Yes, so if I was in Indonesia and Muslim, I would still, you know, wear skin tight jeans and tops, and I would maybe take photos cheek to cheek with my male friend, do you know, and it wouldn't be a big deal. Whereas I might live in another country where culturally I would wear an abaya and I probably wouldn't socialize with a lot of boys after the age of, you know, 13. It's all very different. It's not a conversation so much about religion, it's a conversation about culture. And he was asking, you know, how will you incorporate her culture into your international school?
Yes, and that's the question. That's another question that raises for me is, that's obviously something she's feeling. So he wants her to enjoy and participate, but she is feeling the cultural constraints one way or another, that because of her self-imposed or otherwise. So she goes to the international school. Does then she go home and the rest of her life is immersed in that culture? Yes. And so she's only seeing these very small parts of a different culture, and that's very difficult because cultural integration is very hard. Ask any person who moves to another country.
Yeah.
You're suddenly the tiniest, you're the minority by a mile culturally, even if you look like other people and act like, and sometimes even if you talk the same language, you're still a cultural minority and you feel extremely uncomfortable about it. And then you go back to your house and then that's your world, you know, that's where you're normal and you feel the same way. But if she's going to school and that's where she's the minority in her mind, and then the rest of her life she's living in the other culture, that's very different, because the other kids at that school who are expats, not locals, go back to their homes and the rest of their lives, and even though they're living in another culture, the rest of their lives are also the same life that they're living at school.
Yeah, that's right. And I loved this man. I really wanted to go and approach him afterwards and go, you're so cool. But I thought it might be slightly condescending.
Because he's just a dad trying to get his daughter to camp. Hello.
And I just thought it was just lovely to see, do you know, in any culture anyway, but I just thought it was just lovely to see him. And you could tell, like when he said, I waited for everyone else to ask this question, hoping someone else would ask it. Because, you know, there are things that come up all the time that maybe people wouldn't think about in other parts of the world of, you know, they're not allowed to take a mobile phone to camp. So then how do you set your alarm to pray if you're going to get up and pray at dawn when all the other kids are sleeping and you just want to go and quietly go about it? The fact that there are prayer tents at camp, I think a lot of people wouldn't think about in other parts of the world. So they do, you know, the school really does culturally accommodate, but there's always going to be things, and I think that's, as parents, you know, I guess that's when you're going to stick your hand up in front of 100 other parents and say, I kind of thought things might be this way. How are we going to make this happen?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. So it is tough. And it's another reason why I'm reading my special book about how schools should deal with international environments.
So, Nikki, expat relationships. Today's going to be a cracker, because a little bit of background. You and I got on this call today, not really sure, and you said, oh, look, I've got an anonymous question for the Facebook group. And how many anonymous questions do you think we get every day on that Facebook group?
We get a lot. Look, we get more than we post, because not everything, you know, probably is appropriate to post. You know, it comes in batches. If someone sees an anonymous post, and they often think, oh, good point, I wanted to ask this question. Yes. So it depends. And so we get a few.
Today's anonymous post. Let it rip, Nikki.
All right. So the post was basically this. After 5 years as a homemaker, having given up a career I love to follow my husband, I found a new career path for myself and gone back to work part-time. I've been incredibly lucky to get a part-time role in a place where part-time is not the norm, and I love the job. But like many part-time roles, I'm just juggling a full-time job in fewer hours. However, my husband has made it perfectly clear that working is my choice and everything to do with the kids remains my responsibility, because he can't possibly leave work early. And not early, she says, just like 5:30 p.m. So I find myself leaving my desk around 4 while my colleagues are still in full flow, taking the kids places, getting them fed, homework, bed, and then picking up my day's work so I get my hours in. I'm so lucky to have an understanding boss, but this week something finally snapped. I would just like to be able to do a full day in the office on one of the days I work. I asked my husband if he could pick up one of my daughters from an activity, and he refused. Even though there's no actual reason why he couldn't leave work a little earlier, he just doesn't see it as his job. After 21 years together, I feel completely unsure about where to head next. We have been arguing about this constantly. I think he's had it too easy for too long and thinks his job is more important than mine. I feel like I'm in a 1950s housewife having to fight for my right to work. When I went back to work, I had this vision that our two children would be both of our responsibilities, but I was obviously wrong. Where do I go with this? He walked out this morning without even saying goodbye. I'm pretty certain I'm not the first person to experience this. His work schedule is pretty erratic. He's away approximately half the month. And so is it really too much to ask that when he's here, he just takes a little of the pressure off?
Ouch, ouch, ouch.
So that's a tricky situation, but a cracker of the question for the group.
It is a cracker of a question. And, you know, I know there's kind of two responses to this. There is the person that automatically goes, your husband's awful. He's just a, you know, 1950s, blah, blah, blah. Get rid of him. You need to leave, blah, blah, blah. You need counselling, whatever. Okay. And then there's the other, let's take a deep breath, have a cup of tea, and have a little think about this. But I think, Nikki, I have been in this exact situation when we lived in Canada after 7 years, I think it was, of travelling around with my husband and having four children in that time on the go. I went back to work and I know exactly that feeling. The walk of shame when you have to leave at four and everybody else is staying till five, that's a whole new thing because that's that part-time thing as well.
Yeah.
But I remember with me, I had a car park that was, you know, I guess, you know, half a K away from the office, and I would actually, and I'm not exaggerating, I would sprint to my car, like run at full tilt to my car, drive at breakneck speed to get to the school, to pick the kids up on time, to then, you know, get them home. And I did that for about 3 months, I think, where I literally every day run, flat chat, get the car, drive ridiculously fast, and then get to the school, and then, and do it. And then I think
have to go home and do all the things. Unpack them from the car, unpack their school bags.
Yeah.
Feed them, bath them.
All that stuff. So, but then I did what a lot of people sort of have suggested here. One of the people who wrote a comment, and Nikki, this post is currently exploding as we're talking. So we've shut down Facebook and you and I are chatting. So God knows what's happening there, but it was, people jumped onto this post straight away, but somebody said the suggestion was to hire an ad hoc driver to take the pressure off both of you. She said her husband also travels very often, and when he's in town, he's really catching up on what he has to do and he can't really leave the office early. So I think mine was Canada and had great laws for, they had a live-in foreign workers program. So we had a nanny, and I then had a discussion with work because they asked me if I could stay anyway and go to full-time hours. And I think that was kind of the, okay, we need to work out if I'm going to go full-time, this is how we're going to make it work. And I think that's the problem with part-time work as well. You know, it sounds great, but, you know, as you...
Yeah, because people think you can just fit it in.
Yeah.
Just fit it in.
Yeah.
To what you're already doing.
Yeah.
What you're already doing, your life is already full, but just I'm going to have this part-time job. And people think because it's part-time, oh, it doesn't pay as much. So, you know, really it's just a whole thing.
Yes.
And as she says in the post, she's doing a full-time job in part-time hours because that's what a part-time job ends up being a lot of the time.
Yeah. So my number one advice would be that discussion needs to happen before you go back to work. Right. So if there's anyone out there now who's been out of the workforce having babies and they're thinking about going back into the workforce, I think it all sounds great on paper. And then the reality comes and suddenly your marriage looks completely different than it has. And no man, I think, will admit that he has enjoyed having his wife at home to take care of all of those administrative nightmares that he hasn't had to. I don't think any man would admit it because they know that it's politically incorrect for a start, but also it's very hard, I think, as a bloke to admit that your wife's job is incredibly inconvenient to your life. And this bloke has been very honest with his wife. He hasn't pretended at all. So I'm going to give him that he's been very good.
Points
for being honest that this is really upsetting your world and this was not a decision of yours and you didn't want it. You know, what ended up happening with my husband was we did have that very serious conversation, and I was lucky that I did earn a good salary as well. And I don't think that was his problem. I think that's quite often it's our own problem when we say, I've noticed in this thread there's been a few women that have said things like, my husband earns three times more than me or whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to say that again. It doesn't matter who earns the most money.
Agree.
And my point with that is if you haven't read The Wife Drought by Annabelle Crabb, please go and read it because she makes a very good point very early in that book. And that is something happens when we have children and we have babies and we go home and then maybe we have another baby, and then we start looking at the price of childcare, and we start looking at the cost of what it means to our family to drop a child at childcare, and you know, and also there's matters of the heart where you think, well, no, I don't want to stay home with my child as well. And there's a lot of things that are pulling and tugging at you all at the same time when you're, you know, in this highly hormonal, emotional state of young families. But I can remember in her book she makes the point of what it costs you if you don't go back to work. And I see that happen now all the time with my friends who did stop, is that, yes, you may earn less money going back part-time, or you may not be able to cover the childcare fees, but it's going to cost you in the long term in when you're trying to get back into the workforce and you've left it for 10 or 15 years. So always factor that in, that that baby step into the workforce where maybe your partner is earning, you know, three times more than you, this is just the beginning. You're only just getting back into the workforce, and it doesn't matter because you equally chose together that you would stay home for that time. So it is an equal choice at the time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it is important. And I see it in our own household here. So, you know, I say to my husband jokingly, not jokingly, mm-hmm. you know, your life hasn't changed for 20 years. You move from country to country. And your washing gets done, your cleaning gets done, you know, there's a magical fairy that puts underwear in your drawer, and you know, it doesn't change. What's changed is what I do. So some countries I've been working outside, some countries I've been working from home, but what I'm doing hasn't changed. But so your life hasn't changed, but my life changes every time. And he acknowledges that. But someone else wrote on the post, whether or not we make it explicit, there are unwritten agreements in relationships. So for a long time, it sounds like he's assumed your role in the relationship was childcare and your husband's role was working outside the home. And now you want to change the terms of that relationship, which I think is absolutely legitimate. Yes. But it takes some negotiating. So you're no longer okay with the past terms. So you need to go back to the table and renegotiate your relationship. Yes. And he's currently digging in because change is hard. People don't like change. And we say that. We move countries and we talk about change and everything, but really people don't like change. And this is a change in their lives.
Yes.
And it's the same. And I think my husband and I are going through the same thing now. Now I'm doing a bit more work and he sort of thinks he'll say, come home, ask me, you know, to do something or, that I would normally do and be done the first day. And then he'll say now, oh, did you do that? And I say, I didn't have time because I was working today. And he sort of looks a little bit miffed and then carries on because he realizes that our relationship is changing and the terms of our relationship are changing. And We just have to keep communicating to make sure that that's okay.
Yeah, and this isn't solely an expat thing. It's a marriage thing. It's a partnership thing. Yes. And I saw this at home recently, really good friends. She's been out of the workforce. She's just gone back into the workforce. And I stopped on the side of the road to say, hey, how are you going? And they've just moved into a new house. And he admitted, and I thought it was a good admittance, I guess, in that he said, you know, her job is really bloody inconvenient right now. Like there could have been better times that she could have chosen to go back to work rather than right now because, you know, the electrician needs to come at 7:30 and then one of us has to stay back and one of us has to go and then, you know, she gets held back. And I think we just need to be honest about that. That's exactly what you've just said, Nikki, in that, yes, this is all about you had an agreement. It's now time to discuss and negotiate how the agreement's going to change.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see the comments come in, but as you say, there's sort of two or three kinds of comments and they're along the veins of what we've already discussed. So more power to the poster, and I hope she finds a solution with her husband that works for her.
And I think the advice of outsource the help, sit down and have a conversation about how this is all going to look and then realise that in the long term, you are both going to be better off. But this is one of my mother-in-law's. It's don't blame each other, blame the situation.
I love
that. Yeah, so do I. I was thinking about a post I'd read also during the week with Annabelle Crabb, who'd written about her partnership, and she'd said how they break up the jobs between them. And she said, he takes tax, school admin, laundry, music selection. She takes costumes, birthday presents, parties, and book procurement. She said they both love to cook. And I had read that. And, you know, sometimes when you read something, you're like, yeah, and you're in that mindset, but you haven't shared that mindset with your partner. And,
that's right.
And my husband said to me yesterday, did you send off the documents to the mortgage people? Because, you know, we're doing this pre-approved loan, and they sent us a note saying we want this, 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 and this. And he forwarded it to me. And I, in my head, thought, no, that is not something I do. That's something you do. And so he said last night, did you do those forms? And I said, no, that's not my job. Then I saw the poor bugger was up sort of, you know, 11 o'clock last night before he's going to Vietnam trying to get it all done to send it off. But I do think, you know, maybe you do. We do have those things in marriages. You know, I have been on the phone to the Year 12 student this morning to see how yesterday's exam went, what's going on. I have booked her driving lessons for her so that she can have a driving lesson the minute she bloody gets out of the boarding house and back home. All these little things that I do that he probably doesn't know enough about, unless he checks the Google spreadsheet of jobs. But, we have our roles in relationships, which is particularly with
absolutely.
Children.
Absolutely. And particularly with children and to do with children. And so that's what I've also been doing lately, is I've been involving my husband more. So when I have a conversation with a child about a particular big issue and my husband doesn't happen to be home, I'll say, we talked about this today and these are the things we covered. So when it comes up next time, you're across it.
Yeah.
And if I'm not here, because in the past I've just had the conversations and then carried on and not told, and then I'll be out or away or something will happen. And he'll say, oh, what's going on? I don't know what this is about. That's on me to communicate better about what's going on. So I've taken that on myself.
Now, I would love to hear from other people about what they do and how they do it. You know that you can go to our website, twofatexpats.com, and leave us a message and tell us what you do and what advice you would have given or how things have worked for you. Now, Nikki, technically expat.
Yes. Well, thank you, Kirsty. So last week, I've got a correction, an apology / correction. So last week I talked extensively about an app that I claim to have somewhat more than passing knowledge of, and I spent the time talking about that app being called HubSpot. And, in fact, it's called HubStaff, which makes much more sense when you think about it. So I stand corrected in case people were running off looking for a helpful app how to run their online businesses. So, yeah, that I was wrong. It's HubStaff, not HubSpot. And the other thing I just wanted to touch on in Technically Expat this week is that how powerful technology is. And we talk about it all the time, how powerful it is and how it can change the way we view the world, and particularly how lucky we are to be living this international lifestyle in a time of such great technology. In my other job, I was editing a podcast, and it was an interview with a woman, and her name is Lynn Slater, and she's 64 years old, and she's known online as the Accidental Icon. She's a university professor, and she started a blog and an Instagram page of a bit under 4 years ago, and she now has 557,000 followers.
Is this the woman with the sorry to interrupt, Nikki, but is this the one with the silver hair? And she went to a fashion show and someone photocopied. Yes. I've read about her. I love her. You interviewed her, did you say?
No, I was editing a podcast in which she was the interviewee. Anyway. But she talked about how she started, how she got started, how it all worked together. And she said this quote, which was really, really touched me. And I really thought about it for a long time afterwards, because 10 years ago, a woman like me wouldn't have been let in the door of fashion. It's because of technology, because I didn't say, oh, that's not for me, I'm too old or whatever. I was able to use it to get into a field that I would have been totally excluded from, or I was excluded from until I started to do this. Which is so true.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So you can't, in your late 50s, you can't, or 60, you can't just decide, I'm going to, you know, become a fashion icon.
Yeah.
You know, she used technology. And then we have to remember that how powerful that is, and certainly in dealing with remote work.
Yes. I follow her on Instagram, and she's really striking. And I loved her story too, that she was just on her way me and some friends, and people thought she was someone more than, you know, I guess she was at the time, because she was so impeccably dressed, and she's got a really a certain look about her. But that is bang on the money for expat women of technology and how this has changed our lives and how we can work remotely. I've just posted another job today at, you know, my other place of work for an online role where, you know, flexible hours, 3 days a week, you can do it from home. So I think technology has changed the way we work. But back to our original point with the relationships, I think that you need to keep that in mind as well, because it sounds like, Nikki, that your job, while as flexible as it is, it still does make an impact. I think that might be the key takeaway as well from this one.
That's the key, absolutely. It's all interlocked, yeah, because it's all about your relationship with your partner and how you manage that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now we're on to expat money. Nikki, I just wanted to quickly cover, we won't be long and detailed in today's expat money, but I wanted to talk to you. You were saying, we've talked a lot about Revolut and TransferWise, and you talked about with your TransferWise you were going to get a card. Did your card arrive?
My card did arrive this week in the mail in the specified 5 to 7 day period.
Good.
I'm very excited to unpack it, and it's a beautiful, nice neon green color, so it's never going to get lost in my wallet. I immediately used the very handy TransferWise phone app to activate it and set up the pin for it, but it was so funny because it said share us, because I guess TransferWise is new in terms of having a specific sort of,
yes,
kind of bank account. I know TransferWise is not a bank as such, and I know people are very specific about what's a bank, because you have certain guarantees if your money's in a bank that you don't have if it's in another kind of institution, which TransferWise is. But it said share us, but remember, if you're doing a social share, put your finger over the card number.
Yes. But people do it all the time. You know, the guy I work for, the Barefoot Investor, tells people to cut up their credit cards, and every day someone cuts up their credit cards that shows, you know, not only their whole number but even their three digits on the other side. And it's like, please tell me you have not just cut that up but you've cancelled it, that it's gone. Yes.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to giving it a workout in the coming week, and I'll let you know how that goes.
So tell me, did you decide to get paid via PayPal or via?
No, TransferWise.
So you get paid via, yeah, TransferWise. That money goes straight into that lovely little account, and you can take that card to the wall and access that money.
Exactly.
And correct. You won't get charged any bank fees for using the hole in the wall?
My understanding is not.
Right.
I don't get charged bank fees for using that, because often the biggest issue is using a card with a bank that you don't belong to is the fees that you get charged for actually,
yes,
withdrawing cash or for using it. So I need to, it might be up to a certain limit every month that I can withdraw cash without fee, but I'm going to look,
right,
into that, and I'll get.
And so I guess they're making their money from the deposit from your employer. Is that how it works, rather than you take, but yeah, come back and get back to me. So we'll just, we won't go too much into it. I don't want to put you on the spot where you're having to make an apology next week.
Just a series of rolling apologies. That's how I'm going
to. But there was a message I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear someone phoned in on SpeakPipe, which of course you do by going to our website, twofatexpats.com, and pushing on the microphone. And we had Anna who did that, and she spoke about something that you and I have spoken about a lot. Nikki, should we have a quick listen?
Good morning, ladies. My name is Anna. I am an Australian expat. I'm currently living in Braga in Portugal, and I've been here for 6 months. And previous to that, I lived in Oman in the Middle East for 4 years. So I identify well, Kirsty, with all your information about the Middle East. Really enjoy your show. I've just got on to listening to it. It's really helpful and useful. So well done, ladies. Keep it up. There was a show a few weeks ago about managing money and gratuities and redundancies. I was just going to share, I had a friend in Oman who was unfortunately made redundant after 17 years of being there. She was only given a month to leave, which is really quite stressful. And I know she was sort of at the bank every day trying to get her gratuity. So my take-home message on that would really be, if anyone knows that they're leaving or can plan their exit, is just to try and, you know, send your money out. Yeah, just be as organised as you can, because I know it can be just with logistics and the paperwork and just the stress of moving, trying to do all this stuff at the last minute is not a lot of fun.
Okay, the point I wanted to say, and thank you, Anna, for your lovely message and your comments about the podcast. That's lovely. But thank you also for backing up what we've said all along about getting your money out of the country as quickly as you can, and the nightmare that it is to wrap things up quickly if employment ends and you've got to get out of the country fast.
Yes, I think that's a very good tip. Thank you, Anna, for that.
Okay, location, location, location.
O is for Oman. Now, I know, Kirsty, Oman is on your list, right?
It is totally on my list.
I spoke to Irie. Irie is a Japanese-Filipino, and she grew up between Osaka and Manila, but she currently lives in Oman. Irie's a millennial. She moved to Oman to work for an international hotel chain, and she's previously also lived in London and Shanghai. So Oman is another one of those countries that you need to use a VPN to get Skype and WhatsApp. So that's how we did our recording. And it's a little bit, sound isn't as good as it could be. But I asked her the Fat Five questions, and I started with the regular first question, which is, out of 10, rate how in love with Oman she is.
5. I mean, it's nice for a holiday, but living here is really challenging. Yeah.
What are the parts that you find the most challenging?
Well, because I'm East Asian, it's just a complete contrast of growing up in a big city and moving to Oman. Like, East Asian food quality is limited. What else? It's hard to get by without a car, and taxi is very expensive. But if you want to go on a holiday, I would highly recommend this place. It's beautiful. The beaches are unspoiled, beautiful mountains, beautiful. The scenery is really nice, and people are all warm and genuine, but just not a nice place to live. Well, for me.
What could make it a higher rating for you?
I guess it's not that it's a horrible place, but I'm a city girl, and this is not a big city. Like, the MAC stores, like makeup stores here, are limited. You know, like, their stocks are limited, and the fashion is outdated. Like, you can't. There are no nice shops here with nice brand, not luxury brands. They don't have it here, but you can always go to Dubai because it's only 2 hours by car. Yeah.
Do you have something that's the best local find?
Well, the souks are really nice, like the Arabic market. If you like frankincense, then this is the place.
Do you like frankincense?
Not too much. Oh, the dates are really delicious here. Arabic dates, yeah.
What drives you crazy about living there?
Oh, Ramadan drives me crazy. Living here during Ramadan, the weather is horrible. Like, it could go up to 50 degrees Celsius. It's like walking in the sauna and nothing is open after iftar. Yeah, living here during Ramadan season where nothing is open during the daytime.
What's one place you'd love to live?
Shanghai. Or London, maybe. London. Or New York, maybe New York.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about living this kind of life, expat life, where you live in different countries?
I guess just be open and enjoy everything, the culture, even if it's different from you. And yeah, just have fun and make the most out of it, make friends.
Is there a big lesson that you've learned doing this? Is there something you've learned by living in different places?
That people are interesting, and you'll meet really, really nice ones, like really good ones that you'll be friends with forever.
So another thing we do is we give recommendations at the end of the podcast of books and TV shows or movies or podcasts that we're listening to. Do you have a favorite thing at the moment, a book you're reading or a show you're watching or a movie you've seen?
I don't read. maybe Seinfeld. Seinfeld is funny. What else? The Sopranos. Like, The Sopranos is always good. It's a classic. I love that TV show.
Oh my God, she's so sweet. She's gorgeous. But she's a millennial listening to Seinfeld and watching The Sopranos. Do we need to tell her about all the new things?
Well, she's hipster. I thought it was kind of old school hipster.
It was gorgeous. Now, the one thing I do have to point out, though, is Ari said about the Ramadan season and it was so hot. Now, Ramadan changes constantly. So Ramadan will maybe sometimes be in January and maybe sometimes be in June and maybe sometimes be in December, depending on what is happening cyclically with the moon. But yeah, so it's,
she's just been there under a year, so I guess for her that was her experience.
And absolutely it's tough. Ramadan in summer is really tough because the days are obviously really long and it is hot.
And I did ask, I thought it was interesting her perspective, because often we speak to people who have family, have moved with a partner or a family. Yeah. So I thought it was good to get an individual's perspective. So I asked her, I said, do you think it would be different if you lived there with a partner or with a family? She said, oh, yeah, this is a great place for families. Oh, families should definitely move here.
Yeah.
And she talked about the great international schools and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So it was just a different perspective. So
I thought she was beautiful, fantastic, really, really good. And obviously a real city person. And it's funny you were saying about my mom, because we have a few days this month where child number 4 will be away and child number 3 will be home just with us. And so we were trying to work out, I've really seriously been contemplating the idea of just taking him somewhere. We're just me and him going somewhere together. You know, we haven't, I know there's a lot of families that do that. You know, we've got friends here that one parent took each child away somewhere for an adventure on their 16th birthday. Do you know, and I have other friends who take a child out of school for a day and they, you know, they say yes to everything for that day and whatever. We've never done that. We've never been that family. And I was thinking, oh, he goes away to school in January. Do you know, I might kind of kill to have 3 days. And he said, could we go to Oman? And he's already been there. And I said, oh, don't you want to go somewhere you haven't been? I haven't been there. He went there on a rugby trip. And he said, Mum, it's just so beautiful. I'd love to go with you and show you just how beautiful it is. And he said, the food's fantastic. The mountains are beautiful. What he particularly likes is from Middle Eastern country, the Omani people are very much working people. You know, Omani people drive taxis.
Yes.
They work behind counters in delis, which, you know, you don't get here in Qatar. He said, Mum, you would just love it. So I don't know, maybe it's in my future, maybe not. And they're, you know, one of the small amount of people in a close by that still let us come and visit them.
So going on recommendations for reading, watching and podcasts and food, what have you got, Kirsty?
Telly, I finished watching with my husband Killing Eve last night. The ending is fantastic. So if anyone is interested, it's one of the first series in a long time where my husband and I have polished it off in a week. Do you know, where we've made an effort to sit down and watch. And last night, I guess too, because he was going away, he was like, oh, can we watch Killing Eve? Can we watch Killing Eve? So I know I spoke about it last week, but I just want to say the ending is fantastic. And while we're speaking about endings, Nikki, is everybody else trying to ruin A Star Is Born for you as well? Because I haven't watched it yet, but I tell you, the amount of spoiler alerts where people have just started to talk about it, obviously something big happens. Or, hold on, now that I'm thinking about your personality, have you already gone and read all those spoiler alerts and you haven't watched it?
Listen, It's the third time the movie's been remade. There are no spoilers. It's the same movie.
I haven't seen the original.
You've never seen the Barbara Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version?
No, I haven't. No. No, no, no. I haven't seen A Star Is Born. And there's all these conversations keep popping up everywhere and it's like, hang on, hang on. Look, I know something drastic happens. I'm just trying not to have it fully confirm which drastic thing happens to which person. God's sake, people, please.
Well, are you going to go and see them?
I am.
What are you doing?
I will. I will. Do you know what? I'm going to put that on the agenda. Although I hate seeing movies in Qatar because so much gets cut out that I don't want to miss all the good bits.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, like we miss all the sex bits.
It's less than a month till you go to Australia. There'll still be a cinema somewhere playing.
It'll be on the plane.
11 a.m. No, I don't think it'll be on the plane. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but it is on at the cinema around the corner from me in English. So that is my intention.
All right, good. I also wanted to talk about something I had seen, and I did see this on a plane, and it was one of those, you know, you've got 20 minutes till the plane's going to land, so you can't really start a new TV show or a new movie. And I watched Celeste Headlee's 10 Ways to Have a Better Conversation, which is a TED Talk. So on Qatar Airways, they have a whole channel of entertainment with TED Talks. It was one of those things I watched and thought, right, excuse me, I'm making a note of this and I'm going to send this straight to my children, because in her intro she kind of talks about the art of conversation being lost, that they think that our children on average send at least 100 texts a day.
Right.
Yes. And because our children choose to text and don't want to talk on the phone and always appear to, you know, have their head down in a screen of some sort, they are really losing that art of having a conversation. And if you would have seen my children on some Saturday afternoon at the art exhibition that we took them to with friends, you would think that they'd definitely lost the art of conversation, because we had one of those excruciating moments where you sit with your children with other people and they look stone-faced and someone asks them a question, they're like, yep, nah. Because they don't really want to be there and you haven't, you know, read them the riot act before you've got there. I know. Do you know, when my kids were little, I used to read the riot act before we went anywhere. Like, this is what you're going to do. This is how you will behave. This is what you will say when someone says this to you. Do you understand? Like, just to show them that it was impolite to behave like that. I didn't do that. I don't tend to do that as much anymore now that my kids are bigger. But I should have done that on Saturday. Anyway, off track. But these were the 10 points that were made. Listen, if your mouth is open, you're not learning. Don't multitask, which, Nikki, you and I have done, where we quite often get on a call before we podcast and then multitask and talk about 10 other things that are going on in front of us. Don't pontificate, as in, you know, assume that you have something to learn from the conversation. Make sure that your language is very open-ended. How did that feel? What was that like? Going with the flow, and this is what I am really bad at. Someone's deep in conversation telling me something, it reminds me of something else, you know, that whole squirrel, and then I'm gone. Oh, yeah. And I'm off track. I'm very bad at that. Honesty, don't say you know if you don't know. And the big one, I think this is so, so big, don't equate their experiences with yours. So, that happened to my auntie, or that was like when this happened to me, or that was like my cousin's brother's, whatever. It's not. There's no way it's anything like that. So don't do it. Stay out of the weeds. People don't care about names, dates, years, and minute details, and be really brief. The phrase she used was something her sister had said: a good conversation is like a miniskirt, short enough to retain interest but long enough to cover the subject. And I thought it was just a really good reminder. Yeah, synopsis.
Yeah, it's great. I need those tattooed on my palm of my hand. So
Do you think that kids are losing the art of conversation because they choose to text and talk in other ways?
I do in a way. And then in another way, I think, well, how many conversations was I having with adults? So it's a catch 22. I was pleasantly surprised on the weekend when my husband brought a friend over and he had three small children, all smaller than my children. And my children came out and involved themselves in the conversation and with playing with the children without me reading any riot acts.
Yeah, lovely.
And I thought, that's good. Because I just expected them not to. I expected them to shut doors and say, don't let little kids in my room and things like that. So I don't know. Look, my kids aren't great conversationalists. I do cringe internally when they're talking to other adults in some situations. But I think within ourselves as a family, we have good conversations.
Yes.
But it's with people they're comfortable with. So I think maybe we've lost the art. My children maybe don't have the art, which is so weird, of speaking to strangers very well. Which sounds so strange because they live this life where they're always exposed
to
strangers.
Remove the adults out of the equation, right? So it's that art of conversation, because I see it with myself, and I see other people my age saying it now, where, you know, they're getting rid of the home phone because who rings your home phone, and then please don't call me, just text me. You know, that it's become so much easier to just text everything. You know, we're now even getting to the stage where we don't ring the doctors to make an appointment. It's all done through appointments online.
God, if I can't, if I don't have to.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we're really removing all opportunities to talk to strangers, you know, in those situations.
Yeah, I guess it's something you have to come to terms with yourself. I sometimes say, I'd love my kids just to wear an invisible GoPro on their chest all day, and when they're at school, I just want to see how they interact with other people.
Yeah.
I just love that opportunity to understand. When they come home and tell me about a conversation, I think, how can that conversation have happened? How did those topics come up? I think I just want an invisible little GoPro so I just understand what's going on in their life.
Okay, what have you watched lately?
Well, Kirsty, you're not anyone if you're not watching Bodyguard. Are you watching Bodyguard?
I know. I'm not yet, but I will be next week.
It's a little
bit
like A Star Is Born. I'm not going to ruin it, but I'll just tell you that we can talk about it next week, but the guy, when you start watching it, I want to know what you think the guy's name is, because it drove me crazy for about...
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Anyway. All right. Okay, well, I'll definitely be watching it next week, because we've finished Killing Eve. We need something else to watch, and that's top of the list. So husband gets home on Thursday night. I'll make sure it's up there. I'll be doing it without any alcohol or sugar.
And in the spirit of Irie, I'm also watching a throwback TV series, and I started watching Friday Night Lights, rewatching.
I didn't ever watch that.
I didn't ever watch it either, and so many people told me to watch it, particularly when I moved to the US. People told me I had to watch it when I moved to the South, and I didn't watch it then either. And then I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it was a political podcast about lots of things, and they said, you know, in a throwback to sweeter, gentler times, I've started rewatching Friday Night Lights. And then in one of those crazy, weird, all your devices are listening to you all the time, it got thrown up to me as a suggestion when I was looking for a TV show to watch.
Podcast suggestions this week. Do you have a podcast suggestion?
I don't. I've been listening to loads and loads, all the political podcasts in the lead up to the US midterms, which are, of course, today. Today is the day we're recording. But so I've been listening to that.
What is your favourite US political podcast?
Oh, I can't say. I have so many. if they all downloaded at once, which would I listen to first? There's one called Left, Right, and Center, which purports to have a middle person and then a proponent of both sides, and they talk about the political issues of the week. And then there's another one called Political Gab Fest, which is meant to basically the same thing. And they're probably the ones that I would, if everything downloaded at once, they're probably the ones I'd listen to first. But I do listen to a wide range, lots and lots. A little bit, my political podcasts are your footy podcast. That's how it goes.
Okay. So, Nikki, I think
we're done. Perfect. I'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Bye.